With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you, and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. And we are sitting here in beautiful Hot Springs, Florida, with Danielle and Susan, and he's helping us to revamp the website. So hopefully it won't be too long, and you all will see a whole new look out there. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to Michael. And welcome to the show. Hi, Michael.
Hey, sweetie. Glad to be here. Delighted. I better get a little bit away from your sound there. Anyway, we're just honored to have everybody on the show that's on the show. We're delighted to be able to support you in this project of teaching and learning forgiveness and healing ourselves, each other, and the planet. We do want to continue our honoring of Memorial Day by... carrying forward the project of eradicating war from planet Earth. And our plan for doing that, which of course everybody would say it's impossible to do, or most everybody, our plan is to reach a critical mass of people who understand what projection is, understand that when there is pain or turmoil of any kind inside of oneself, whoever, whatever they're looking at is not the cause of the pain and turmoil, but rather that the cause of the pain and turmoil is what's going on inside of them. And when one denies ownership of what's going on inside of them, their mind produces this magical thing called dissociation and then projection. What's going on inside of me must be all their fault. But you might want to notice that if you've been through that particular form of pain 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. Your pain, your turmoil, your trauma, your drama is all about you. It's not about anybody else. And the minute that you have some sort of turmoil and you enter into a conversation about someone else, you just entered into dissociation. You have to hide a part of your mind to believe that the reason you're upset is all about someone else. And so lots of people say, well, I know I have a problem here, and then they go on with a whole conversation about what the other person did. If you found yourself doing that, then you're living in a state of denial. And of course, denial is not a river in Egypt. It's what we do when we don't want to be responsible for the content of our own minds. And the mind has this awesome, magical, I'm not even sure how to put it, it's so powerful, way of taking its own content and making pictures that look like they're pictures of something outside of them. There are enough reference points that to match what's going on outside, and they actually believe that what's going on inside is and their picture of it is what's actually out there, and it's the big lie. And so what we're looking to do is to assist people through forgiveness to collapse the big lie and to be able to put an end to projection, crack open their own dissociated minds, and come to the point of healing the root and the source of their trauma, their drama, which is their own internal content. 1,000 generations of insanity gets passed every time a conception occurs, and the insanity on the planet today is rampant. And fortunately, you know, there was this awesome physicist who lived 2,000 years ago who said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. I think we can fairly safely assume that he was not talking about bread. He was talking about the whole of humanity. We don't have to get everybody to understand this whole process of denial, dissociation, and projection, and then forgiveness to clean it up. All we have to do is get enough people who will take the time to build the brain cells to understand what it is we're talking about and move past their own projections and recognize that whenever their own mind is showing them a picture based in hostility or fear, the picture is always a picture of an internal condition made to look like it's outside of us. That's called projection. So when you look at a body of someone else and you're in pain, the body that you're looking at is not the person who stands in front of you. If you could see who was actually there in front of you, you'd see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. What you're seeing is what that being in front of you resonates that you don't want to deal with, and you take literally the content that they resonate in you and you build a picture of them, and they show up in your mind with your problem attached, but you're sure it must be their problem because you can see their body and you can see that it's them. Of course, when you get into understanding the physics of it, and we have the blessing now of a deeper level of physics perhaps than has ever had been had on the planet before. And you recognize, you know, if you listen to Einstein, he says, on such things as matter, we've been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy. Energy is vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. If there is no matter, then there is not a body out there to look at. There is a being. There is this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. But the body you see is a product of what's firing inside your own mind. If that doesn't make any sense, you hang around the teaching long enough to build the brain cells to make sense of what otherwise won't make any sense and won't be functional for you. Once you build the brain cells and you really start to comprehend that and apply the tool of forgiveness, you will literally have the opportunity to address every rage, every grief, every fear, every hatred, every vengeance in your tissue structure and stop the game of projection. And if something happens in your life that you don't like, instead of being in pain and turmoil and talking about everybody else, you'll stop and go, whoa, I have some pain about that. I have some fear. I have some grief. I have some rage. I have some sadness. Gee, what's going on inside of me rather than, well, you see, this is what happened, and they did this, and they did that, and if only they'd do this, and if only they'd do that, then things would be better and things would be different. So that's what we're here to, of course, learn ourselves, because it is a learning process. We've all got the 1,000 generations of insane content in our minds, and so it's a continuous ongoing learning process. And that's what we're here to learn and to support each of you in learning. And inviting you to be part of the team that changed the world means that we're going to ask you to, every time you face any form of hostility or fear, that you enter into the forgiveness process and literally remove your very capacity for hostility or fear and end up experiencing your life as a true human life. We have a simple experiential definition for a human life: hold a newborn child. Our thesis is that's what you're designed to live as. If you're not, well, join the team. Let's get to work. So, Jeannie, Dr. Tim with us, David with us, Ari with us, anybody from Heartland on the show?
Well, David is with us. Not sure. I don't have Ari's phone number memorized. So, if he's on there, Ari,
you're on there. 312, I think.
Press 1, and that'll let me know that you're there. We do have two callers on the line. Dr. Tim is not with us, but David is.
Okay. Well, let's say a quick welcome to David and say hello, and how do you be, and how are things happening there?
Hello, Michael and Jeannie and Dr. Chan and everyone that's listening in, and the Heart group, they are listening in as well. They'll have to press 1 so their hand will be raised up and recognize Mary Lou's phone number. And it's going well here. The group is really growing, evolving, or for lack of a better words, with it. Their participation and their willingness is really extraordinary. And both the accomplishments that are getting handled around here as far as the work jobs and also their own personal work that they're doing. We have a new guest here, and it's going well. So if anyone's listening in over there and wants to make a comment, well, then please feel free to do so.
Fabulous. Well, the folks that we're staying with, we're working on the website. Daniel just came over and took a picture. I'm doing this show from a hammock under the sun in the trees, and so he just grabbed the picture. I'm sure that'll probably end up on the website. But anyway, we're glad you're here, and let's talk to our first caller, Jeannie.
All right, the first one I believe might be Nene. It's 970. You're on the air.
Actually, it's Carrie from Colorado.
Yeah, Nene is 954. Welcome, Carrie. How are you, young lady?
Good, and hello to everyone there. And I'm excited to see your new website, newly designed website. I can't wait to see it because that's some of the stuff I'm working on all the time. So I'm excited to see what the folks are coming out with. It'll be really neat. I had a really
interesting...
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome.
It is, yeah. I can't wait to see it. It'll be cool. I'm sure it must be updating things, and it'll be really fun to see. And not to say what was there already wasn't great. I mean, I've always appreciated how much content is there and how easy it is to access. And but definitely in the online world, things are always moving and developing, so it's nice to kind of update things periodically too. So.
And Jeannie's the one to thank for all that content being there because she has just... Work like a Trojan in there.
Yeah, I think of her every time I look at it. I think, boy, she's really put a lot into all the little details and nooks and crannies of that site. So it really has been wonderful to see over the last year. I had a really interesting experience last night, and there may be more of this coming up as we get closer to the elections. I have a community of friends on Facebook, and I kind of use that as a place to communicate on a regular basis, you know, things that I'm thinking about and perceiving about life, and I really enjoy that community. And somebody had posted a little list of details about one of the presidential candidates, and I thought, oh, this is really interesting. I didn't know this content, and I reposted it, and I thought I might get some reactions to this. And then above it I wrote, well, if this is true, maybe it's something we should be taking a look at. And so I didn't really think any more about it. And I have a friend who's married to kind of a conservative rancher guy, and he ended up responding to it and writing, you know, I would totally vote for this guy before I vote for that Muslim that's in there messing things up now or something. I can't even remember exactly what he wrote. And I looked at it and I thought, I didn't even react to his, I'm sort of non-political these days, although I consider it really a privilege to be able to vote and be in all the advancements we have in this country. Still, my main goal in life is to be living in love and to be choosing that kind of above and beyond everything. So I didn't feel any reaction when he wrote it. I just wrote back and said, oh, well, you know, that's why we all get to vote. And then several of my friends posted under my comment, and one of them said, Carrie, who are your friends? I can't even believe this is your friend. Maybe I should unfriend you. And another one said, yeah, you know, where is this coming from? And I just sat there and I thought, and I didn't even react to those, you know. I thought, oh, this is interesting. Another one wrote, yeah, if you're selling something, you've just got to agree with everyone, don't you? And I thought, I don't know what that means, but I just sat there and I thought, oh, this is really interesting. And I was thinking how I didn't really feel very reactive to any of them, and I thought, this is interesting. And then I wrote, when the person wrote, you know, if we're selling something, then we have to get along with everyone. And so then I wrote back and I said, you know, I've spent the last year participating in the ancient Aramaic forgiveness process and learning how we have run, so for many thousands of generations, we've run our human culture with fear and hostility, based in fear and hostility. And every effort of my life at this point is to be on what I call my own spiritual path, but of clearing that fear and hostility to live in pure love. And that's my choice of how to relate to these things. And then someone else responded under that and said, you know, this is how I do my business and blah, blah, blah. And I really do agree with what you're saying about the spiritual viewpoint and changing our DNA and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, this is really, you know, I just hadn't even expected that trail of conversation to come out of that. But I thought, you know, I'm just going to tell the truth of what I'm really into here. And these people can think whatever they want, from the person who's the extremist and doesn't like, you know, the religious beliefs of the current president to the people who think it's awful that somebody would say something like that. I thought, you know, I put the link to whyagain.com, and I said, you know, this wonderful work is being done by my friend Dr. Michael Rice, and it's really a great way to change how our perceptions of how we're living in this world. So anyway, there's going to be more and more of these kind of things probably appearing on the scene as we get closer to the election, and it was really a neat experience to feel where I've gotten to inside myself, and to sort of just watch this dialogue go on and realize that the only voice I really wanted to have was about us stepping into a greater knowledge of our own sense of being a loving being.
Yeah, well, I acknowledge you for the work you've done over the last year. And it's interesting for me, as you talk about that, I never thought of Facebook as a metaphor for the individual. And when you think about Facebook, it is a community of millions of people. When you think of what we call our body, it's a community of trillions of cells. And when someone has, let's say, for instance, they say, you know, he had a heart attack or she has cancer or whatever, it's kind of like those are the cells that have been unfriended, that we've disconnected from. It's another way, really, of talking about dissociating from ourselves and pretending that you're not part of, you know, if you listen to Einstein, he says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And everybody that we unfriend becomes an alien cell within our own bodies. And ultimately, those people are going to show up to bring forward the parts of us with which we have unfriended them. That is the hostility and fear that creates this separation, that I think that the person out there is not part of me. And, I mean, you know, maybe somebody could argue with Einstein with this thing about if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. But the truth is, there's only one of us. If we could raise the vibratory rate at which our eye receives information, we'd see the energy that links us all together. We can't separate from each other if we want. But when I separate, when I unfriend a part of my own structure, I create a universe of separateness that looks like it's out there. And as you forgive more and more, rather than the painful traumatic reactions that would, you know, that would have come previously, you just stand in that space of connectedness and love for every part of yourself, you know, whatever the religious persuasion, the sexual persuasion, the color of the skin, the, you know, the nationality or ethnicity. It's really, you know, the truth is there's only one of us. That's a physics fact. And each cell in our body reflects back to us our own content, and our feelings reflect to us what content we need to heal. If there's hostility and fear attached, get out a worksheet, you know, start forgiving. And that's when you start reconnecting truly, fully as a human being.
Yeah, you know, I would say too, I think going through that process, I became more aware of how doing so many worksheets, I think I've probably done 300 in the last year, that now, I mean, I'm to the point where I can actually talk somebody through a worksheet without having to have the worksheet in front of me, and that's really fun. And I can know that, you know, like when that person made the comment about the religious persuasion of the president, I thought, I didn't even think about it, but it's like there's an automatic goal-canceling process acting inside of me now that goes, well, you know, I may not agree with him, or he may not be saying this in a kind way, and would my goal for him to be to say it in a kinder way? Well, okay, am I willing to give that up? Okay, well, can I stand here in a loving relationship with him? And, you know, kind of just really neat to see the whole process just really blossoming inside my heart. And it was sort of a unplanned, unexpected medium to do that in, but
breathe.
Waterfall. Yeah. So.
And I think, Carrie, you've underestimated your worksheet numbering, because I know there were days when I talked to you and you were on your seventh worksheet. So in 365 days, I would suspect it's probably more like maybe a couple thousand rather than 300.
It's definitely a lot. I've kind of lost count. I haven't kept a really careful track. No, I just go print 100 at a time, and when the pile's almost gone, I go print another 100. But you're so right. I mean, what a beautiful opportunity to put this work into practice in just, you know, how we respond to what we hear going on around us, and to be able to just hold a space of love for all those people that are coming. It's kind of like being a tuning fork, you know, and going, okay,
exactly.
I can really hold the love vibration in the middle of this and not have expectations or goals for any of these people, or have given up my goals, and just hold the space for pure love. And just see. And it was really nice to have another friend who was kind of a spiritual person say, you know, I don't really agree. You know, I see the things on this list that you posted, and there are things that I'm probably not going to vote for that person, and I really agree with where you're coming from as far as holding the space of love for, you know, for each of us, and to clear our DNA and clear the hostility and fear that we've operated in. So it was fun to also be able to just have found in myself enough clarity to just state those things in a dialogue like that, sort of in a public place like Facebook, and it's really neat.
Cool. And if somebody wants to find you on Facebook and link with you?
Just they can look up Carrie Ellis, facebook.com/ CarrieEllis. And I'm also going to have, I've got several Facebook pages that are kind of lapsed right now that I've got to update since Facebook has changed their style of how they function internally. But, and people can also find me at CarrieEllis.com. So,
cool.
Book.
Cool. And, you know, when you talk about the reactions and or responses, one of the biggest pieces that one gets as they engage in this work is that every response and every reaction is autobiographical. Our brain shows it as them, but the truth is that picture that our mind presents and feelings that go along with it detail for us what's going on inside of us, not what's going on outside of us. And what I can't be in that space of love for is the next piece of work I need to do. And the universe is just so awesome at presenting to us the next piece of work we need to do. It's really powerful to recognize that, and that when your every response is connected to being and connected to love, then you know that you're living a human life. That doesn't mean that, you know, one of the other games of the world is, well, you know, you just have to accept everybody and everything. I don't have to accept everybody and everything. That's not required. My requirement is that I maintain a human life, that I maintain my connectedness to love, and recognize that when I can't maintain my connectedness, then I have healing work to do. I have forgiveness to do. And then if somebody does something that's bizarre and off the wall, as opposed to buying the brainwash of the culture as well. You just have to accept everything. I can say thank you very much. I'll pass on that, and I'll stay connected to love as I do. There's an awesome scene in the movie Gandhi. There's some fabulous examples of the work in the movie Gandhi. And he goes in to see Colonel Smuts, who's been responsible for the death of thousands of Indians and the decimation of the culture to, I mean, just what the Brits did there is just unconscionable. But he goes in to visit with Colonel Smuts, and he says, I hope this doesn't come between us as men, but I can't go along with your insanity. I can't go along with what you're doing. And I honor you as another cell, another being in my own structure. And my way of holding you accountable for the insane part is to simply do nonviolent non-cooperation. And, you know, I'm never going to cooperate with your insanity, and I love you as a brother, is in essence what he conveys. So it's pretty powerful to stand in that connected space of love and still hold people accountable when they're off the mark.
You know, that's really beautiful. And that was what happened. The first person who commented and said, oh, Carrie, who is this? It's your friend. I can't believe it. Maybe I should unfriend you. And I wrote back and I said, this is the wonderful husband of a little sister of mine. And even though we may have different views on how we'll vote, I still care about him as a person, and I trust and hope that he still cares about me as a person. So, nice.
Interesting how many people would separate themselves over an idea.
Right. And well, I was hoping that dialogue might ignite some little sparks in people's minds, that it could be different than that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we appreciate what you do, and a lot of people are enjoying your book on superimmunity. If you want to check out Carrie's book on superimmunity, you can go to carrieellis.com. And coming out with your 21st century superhuman, am I remembering correctly?
That's
or maybe
correct.
December?
Yep, correct.
Fabulous. Well, we look forward to seeing it when you do.
Yep, thanks. And you guys have a wonderful day, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Hey, it's in the plan. We'll see you in a few weeks at Heartland. Blessings.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, Jeannie, do we have another caller?
We do. Area code 352, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Mary Lou from Heartland. We're here with the crew in the Eternal Support Room.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. I just hit the send button on an email back to you just before the show started. So if you haven't seen that, you'll catch it when the show's over. And how can we support you today? What's happening in your world, in your reality structure?
Well, I'm having some questions and feeling a sense of confusion about regulatory speech. We've started the laws of living, and the first section is the one that's in my personal code as an issue to be dealt with. And I'm going, okay, there is so much what I'm going to call jargon. And in here that I'm kind of like, okay, I'd really like to hear somebody be alive and talk about regulatory speech. And so I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about that, and so that I can sort of start at a point of clarity.
Cool. Well, regulatory speech is the unconscious speech that determines the literal physiological chemistry of the cell, the functioning of the emotions, the output of the mind, and the creative process of the individual. It's the deepest energetic levels within us that radiate out into the world and produce the results that happen in our lives. If you listen to Yeshua, he talks about the power of life and death is in our words, and it's because our words, representative of frequencies in our minds, become key. And Jeannie got an email from someone recently who was really sure about how her life was going to go. And it's a great lesson for looking at the non-being mind and how clear it can become about all the things it doesn't want. And so I think Jeannie's maybe got that prepared and can read that to us, if you would, Jeannie.
Do you want me to read just her last one or the whole correspondence between her and I?
Well, I'm around the regulatory speech, I'm mainly thinking in terms of the whole thing about what I'm not going to do.
Okay.
So that was the earlier part of it, I believe.
She says, she had talked about being stuck, and I had sent her back some information. She had also said that she was going to go back to teaching, but she disliked the children. And so I was suggesting to her that she let go of the tug of war that was within her and that she'd see her world differently and see her world change, and that we could, you know, we could totally change our genetic patterns, we could change our environment and everything, but it meant we had to do our own work, because what she had been talking about was changing all of the people and changing the kids and changing the parents and all of this so that her life would be better as a teacher. And so then she writes
back.
Well,
she's from a small town, and she was going to have to change everybody in the town, pretty much, was the way it came out, right?
Yeah, she wanted to do a DNA test on all of them and show them what their issues were from their genetics. And so it was like, you can't change all these people. You have to change you. And her last email to me, which I have not responded to yet, I had made a statement in it that whatever we see in another is simply a reflection of what we have denied in our own life and that we need to address. And her response to that one, and her response, the things that she mentions in it, had not been mentioned in any of our prior correspondence. So it had to be just coming out of her own unconscious. And so she says, I would never let my children openly disrespect others. I would never try to turn my niece into a whore. I would never let family steal and then get upset or let them stop stealing. I don't understand that statement. I would not go around saying who someone could have sex with. I would not send out to use people. And so, I mean, it's like everything is I would not use people and then have nothing to do with them when I felt like they had nothing else to give to me. I would never have to deal with so many things in my lifetime as are right now with people trying to hurt me. So it can't be that, oh, I told her it looked like the same sides of the coin because she was accusing other people, but then she'd turn around and say basically the same thing, like, you know, that they were just low-life little people and wouldn't move ahead, and then she turned around and talked about being stuck and she couldn't move ahead. So I said, it sounds like the same side of the coin, and she said, so I wouldn't do all of these things that I've just mentioned, so it can't be the same side of the coin. What I think that you did not get is that the town, my apologies, her wording is a little bit off. She names the town that she's in, and I won't say it. It's not a chance for them to change, but they have a viewpoint that they're not willing to change, which to me is she's also saying she's not willing to change. I still talk about making a change for the better to point out how women need to be uplifted and nurtured. So she apparently, as a woman, has not felt like she's been uplifted or nurtured. And so then I wrote back and explained about tuning forks and how we draw into our life issues so that we can heal, and that the energies that she's drawing in, that, you know, I can hear that she's got pain and it's resonated by her surroundings. And I give her some examples of some of the tools that she can use. And I said, remember, it's ask and receive. So it's really a gift, the things that your townspeople or your neighbors or the children in your class are giving you, so that you can heal. And if we remove the disintegrative energies that are within us, then the same situation can happen, and we will not be emotionally attached to the outcome, and we'll have peace in the storm. And so then I went on to use the example of Peter walking on water as long as he stayed focused, but as soon as he started looking at the storm around him, he sank. So I said, I would like to support you in staying focused, let go of your fear and anger, and walk on the water amidst the storm that you seem to be in. You may feel that they deserve your anger, but the question is, do you deserve it? Because it's your physiology that's suffering. I support you in healing. And she wrote back and said, no, thank you.
So Shakespeare says, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." He's in essence there speaking about regulatory speech. So the invitation with regulatory speech, when we get into that in Laws of Living, is to really start to watch your words, and your words are reflective of what's firing in brain cells. You know, oftentimes we'll interact with somebody and they'll, you know, they think of themselves as this all-loving person, and they'll say, well, you know, when Charlie did this, it didn't make me angry at all. It's like, well, if anger isn't firing in brain cells, why are you using the regulatory speech of "it didn't make me angry"? You know, if I were, you know, Jeannie and I are going to leave on Friday and head to North Carolina, and I wouldn't say, well, gee, I'm not going to China on Friday, unless somewhere in brain cells is firing the thought of going to China. So the idea of regulatory speech is to start to watch and pay attention to your words, especially the ones that come out in emotional situations, because those words will tell you about your own dissociated content. And when you make the unconscious conscious come back into conscious relationship, which is what the forgiveness sheet is about, then you get to come back into direct relationship with that dissociated part of the mind that reflects this regulatory speech. And we actually at Heartland call that, and I don't know if David's explained this, but for anybody that's on the radio show, we have a game that we play when we do Laws of Living, or actually in most of our intensives at some point, we'll introduce the regulatory peach game. And the regulatory peach game is so named in honor of a little three-year-old who was at Heartland back a decade or so ago when we were doing Laws of Living. And Orion was sleeping beside his mom, who's doing the course, and he's just waking up. And we spent a couple of days talking about regulatory speech. And we're getting ready to take an intermission, and somebody goes into the kitchen and brings out a big, clear plastic bowl of peaches. Peaches were in season, and that's what we were serving. And Orion, of course, as a three-year-old would do, whispers in Mom's ear loud enough for everybody in the room to hear him, "Mom, are those regulatory peaches?" So we call it the regulatory peach game, and it's the invitation for everybody that's there to feed back to another what they're saying. Like when you hear people say, "Oh, that just kills me," and you listen in this culture at how often people say that, or "That's to die for," or "I can't stand that," or "I can't stomach that," or "That just really kills me." You look at the way people use speech, and then you start to look at the disorders in their structures. I remember working with a young man from Rockford, Illinois. He'd moved to Atlanta from Rockford, separating from his family, all kinds of trauma and drama with his parents. And for a period of about 5 years, has nothing whatsoever to do with them. And he gets a call from his mother one day saying that they're heading to Florida and that they want to come by and spend a day with him. And in a session, the first words out of his mouth were, "My parents are a pain in the you know what." The day his parents arrived, he got hemorrhoids. And the day his parents left, his hemorrhoids disappeared. You watch your speech, because it literally regulates your physiology. Does that kind of give you some insight as to what we mean by all that?
Yes, that's helpful. I was feeling confused if regulatory speech was the internal dialogue, but I'm hearing it now. You're saying it's the words that we use unconsciously that really reflect what's going on in our mind, and because the mind always tells the truth, even though we like to hide it and obfuscate it and not let other people see what's really going on for us.
Correct. And there's also an unconscious component of it, and that's what the worksheet is about doing. You know, we've got a pretty standard understanding of our culture that the mind is somewhat like an iceberg. Most people are aware of about 5%, if that much, which means 95% of processes are unconscious. And if 95% of your mental process and emotional process is unconscious, and you come from 1,000 generations of hostile, rageful, fearful people, then that 95% wreaks havoc in your world and in your body. And the idea is to bring all of that speech from all the generations to open the veil of the temple, which is what the breath and the forgiveness process do, to be able to look at the dissociated content instead of being in indirect relationship with it, which means when somebody comes along and resonates those brain cells, we build a picture of them in our minds and we're sure that they're the problem and what we're feeling has got nothing to do with us. In that state, we're in a totally dissociated state and unable to change the content of our own dissociated minds, where when you enter into forgiveness, you start to crack. And I mean, I can't tell you how many people over the years, they do a workshop and they're like, oh my God, what I found in there. I'm shocked. I can't believe that this is inside of me. It's like, yeah, you got 1,000 generations and some of them are pretty insane people. And that's born and bred inside of all of us. And so if we relegate that to the unconscious level, to the regulatory level, then it creates results in our lives, and we have no idea where those results came from. And oftentimes, you know, the regulatory speech starts as external speech. So we hear somebody else say it. And if we start to take that speech on and move it to the point where it becomes unconscious, then that's what governs us. And so be careful what speech you engage in, what verbal environments you put yourself into, because that ultimately oftentimes becomes the speech that regulates us until we come back into relationship consciously with it, which is what the forgiveness process is about, is allowing us or supporting us in delving into our own dissociated content, getting back into direct relationship with it rather than indirect relationship through projection, and being empowered to change it.
Yeah,
I'm
recognizing that for me, I can get to this place where my mind is so racing that I can't really communicate effectively what's going on, and it's like inside, and I'm guessing that's because there's conflicting goals and an increased level of stress of trying to do it right and to be effective in my communication. And there's, you know, it just seems to snowball into this place of a lot of pain, because at that point I'm really wanting to communicate and yet I'm somehow tripping myself up and not being able to do that. And so I was trying to understand if the regulatory speech is the words I'm using outside, but it does reflect that internal dialogue that's so confusing and blah, blah, blah.
Right, the content. And particularly necessary to grab a hold of and throw out is the speech that shows up when the stress is up and the chips are down. That's where the big healing happens, is in the middle of the muddle when the stress is up and the chips are down. If I can look at the word patterns that I used and then look at the thoughts under those words and trace down, drill down into it, which is what the reality management worksheet does. If I can drill down into that content, then I can remove the root of all pain. And then I'll have a fit structure to embody a human life, and I'll live as an actual human being, that is, as the active presence of love, rather than this ball of emotional responses and reactions and hostilities and fears and griefs and pains and traumas and terrors. And you know, it's like, and so if you're the first person in your bloodline, which coming into contact with this work, it's pretty rare for it to even start to be comprehended on the planet. So if you're the first person coming into this level of thinking and this level of work, it's quite a demanding process to say, I'm going to open, you know, every thought I thought, every word I spoke as a young person when I was unconscious, and then go back and deal with what happened throughout the thread of my father's life in terms of stress and hostility and fear, throughout the thread of my mother's life. I'm gonna actually bring those things forward and clean them up, and then grandpa and grandma on mom's side and dad's side, and great grandma and great grandpa on mom's side and dad's side. You know, when you recognize the Aramaic genetic language, You know, they said the sins of the father would be passed, yea, unto three and four generations, or look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. The first modeling that we had was the speech of our fathers and mothers. And again, speech begins on the external. Then the child repeats that speech out loud. Then the child begins to hide that speech from others, so it moves into silent speech. And if that speech is experienced to reduce stress, then that becomes relegated to the subconscious level and runs behavior. And what we're looking to do is to come back into full conscious relationship with the way and the quality of the speech that has developed in our lives, the way it developed, and remove it. Remove the stuff that's not appropriate. It's based in hostility or fear. You know, if you think about Dan McDougall, who's a person who I co-authored Laws of Living with, if you go back, he one of his favorite statements used to be when we talked about regulatory speeches, do you suppose the person in church is in church because of their speech? Do you suppose the person in prison is in prison because of their speech? Yeah, that's exactly it. That our speech leads us in a direction. And if you listen to the quality of words, if you step inside of a prison cell or a prison and you work with a group of people there and you listen to the quality of their speech, the destructive speech about self, the destructive speech about everybody around them is sowing frequencies that lead them to such levels of stress that they're in prison. If you listen to the average person who's in church, well, there might be some insane speech there too. You listen to the average person that's at church, you know, they're saying a whole lot more words connected to love and connected to functioning as a blessing. And they live in a different world. And they live in a different world. Our offering is because of the words they use. And it's really bizarre, the type of language, especially through music, that's taking over our culture. How much abusive language and abusive thought is communicated through music. And young people who just, because there's a good, you know, beat behind it, just get drawn right into that. And the beat of the music just reinforces and puts that frequency into the cell at another level. Some of these kids are destined for big time trauma with the garbage they're listening to, the speech that they're listening to. Protect the quality of your words, and the best inoculant against insane speech, Yeshua expressed as the first law, and that was rachma. And rachma is the word that was used when they said, what's most important in the law? He said, you must have rachma for the creator and for your neighbor in order to maintain self. So if you had this condition, in Aramaic, the word rachma represents a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allows intentions keyed to love to be the only intentions that come forward from those frontal lobes. And so maintaining rachma was about maintaining speech that was keyed to love, and it changes your life. And then if you're maintaining rachma, and there's a secondary filter in the mind that was called kubba in Aramaic, you're maintaining kubba, that's a filter over the back of the brain, then as that becomes first nature to keep that keyed in, and somebody shows up that resonates something that's less than love in you, some form of hostility or fear, if you can keep rachma and kubba active, those two filters active, then the simple fact that those lower frequencies are passing through those filters, the energy is transmuted. You accelerate the healing process immeasurably when you keep those filters active. If you're standing in front of somebody who's railing and raging and, you know, all of that, what's the average person do? That quality of speech and energy resonates the same quality of speech and energy in the person they're standing in front of. So all of a sudden, the person who says, well, I want to live lovingly, if they haven't cleaned out the regulatory speech, keep the hostility and fear, and somebody in hostility or fear shows up, all of a sudden they're into the same destructive speech patterns. And forgiveness is how you remove those patterns so that somebody could show up railing and raging, and you look and you go, I think I'll maintain control of my own mind rather than turning it over to this speech and these frequencies. And you maintain that condition of love and you enter into a whole new world that the average person hasn't even imagined is possible. Because, of course, everybody out there controls us. And that's one of the basic messages of the world is we want to control your thinking, your mind. Now, this is one piece of the puzzle the Greeks really did have together, and they said, guard the portals of the mind. Be careful who you let in there.
Thanks, David. And thank you, Michael, for this process. I'm in awe of it and willing to go through the emotional and mental symptoms of the healing process because it really resonates a lot of pain and sadness when I hear you talk about it. And so it's hard for me to right now even put words to it. It just creates that emotional
response. Yeah, I breathe with you. It is pretty crazy what's going on the planet, isn't it? When you look at the pain and the trauma that is so, so unnecessary and so inhuman. So, Mary Lou, I'm breathing with you and with everybody there at Heartland, and I'm sure everybody in the room is breathing with you and stepping into holding the space of love for this old dissociated pain to surface. You know, oftentimes this pain started with a little child who was maybe two or three and, you know, starting to comprehend the world and what was going on around them. And they watched mom or dad in unresolvable pain and trauma. I mean, just, you know, stress and breakdown. And the three-year-old ran over and put their arms around mom in her tears or dad in his tears. And said, I love you, Mommy, I love you, Daddy, and wanting to support and change the pain that they were feeling because they were made of the same genetics. The child was feeling the pain of the parent. And they couldn't do it. They didn't know how to create a space of process. And so they made up a whole series of beliefs about themselves based on the fact that they couldn't fix it for the parent who was in that kind of pain. And the file, sort of, so to speak, that the child opened were at that moment were things like, I'm a failure. This is my fault. This is hopeless. This is helpless. And the pain of that is monumental. And that's what needs to be open and relieved, removed, forgiven, to open up the cleaning of the genetics. And so I understand the depth of that sort of experience, and we are delighted that you're there at Heartland, opening that space inside yourself and accepting the support for, let's clean this up. It's time on planet Earth for this to be disappeared. And for us to really, truly function as and treat each other as true human beings.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate the words of putting just the words to the grief is that it does feel like grief. And yet I wouldn't say that on one level, but when you said the word, it really tapped into another level of the pain and the sadness and the tears. And my friend Lenore reminded me to breathe.
Yeah, and that's exactly why you're at Heartland. That's exactly what we want to do. You know, there's a story that I tell in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshops, which I know you've heard, but for our listening audience. And it's a story about, you know, way back, I guess it was in the 80s, there was a sugar shortage in America, and the price of sugar went through the roof. And the story is about this little guy who owns a coffee shop, and he's on the verge of broke, and, you know, a customer comes in and orders coffee, and he pours his coffee for him and pushes the sugar over, and the customer puts a spoon of sugar in his coffee and another spoon of sugar and another spoon of sugar and another spoon of sugar and another. And, you know, this guy can just see his profits going down the drain, so he grabs the sugar away from him and says, doesn't that make your coffee too sweet? Customer says, hell no, not if you don't stir it. and what Heartland is dedicated to, because most people live their lives in a way that they have so many drugs, busyness, rage, fear, alcohol, drugs, junk food. They live in a way that they're continuously drugged, so they don't ever have to look in there and feel that. And what we're looking to do at Heartland is to purify the dietary regimen, get into a natural, quieter space to allow this barrier to start to open, to be able to turn the squelch down, to be more and more sensitive to what's inside of us, to eat a dietary regimen that vitalizes us and stir those things. And, you know, as you heard us say when you did the intensive in Palm Coast a few weeks ago, everybody that you've never dealt with, we invited to come and be there, and they all agreed to show up. And that stirring is an important part of the process. Most people are such control freaks in their lives, they won't allow things to stir. And the minute somebody starts to stir something in them, they're gone. They're out of town. It's like, I'm not even talking to you anymore. And let me go grab a fifth of scotch. Then I'll be okay. I don't have to feel this. And so we're looking to reverse all of those learned dynamics that have been going on for 1,000 generations and acquire some new habits and the ability to breathe in the presence of everybody and everything and let it stir. And it only cleans out when you stir it and forgive it.
So we're here holding the space. I'm certainly getting the stirring. Jeannie might find it real amusing. I ended up agreeing with a suggestion from David that I be involved in the planning and the executing of the meals. So I'm working on that nurturing place of putting myself out there, and my cohorts have been very loving in that response.
And she's doing a wonderful job.
Thanks, Lenore.
And do I get there's a little bit of energy behind that, as you say, in the planning and this of the meals?
Yes.
There's some energy around the kitchen table, isn't there? You know, that's one of the things, you know, at Heartland, that Ari does a great job of holding a space in the kitchen. However, if people are in deep process in the kitchen, he'll ask them to leave, because you don't want to be handling sharp knives and such around people who are bringing your stuff up. But the kitchen, because a lot of people, you know, the place where the pain happened, you know, Dad didn't get home from work till 10 minutes before dinner time and came in a rage about why isn't dinner on the table, and then sat down and proceeded to rail and wail on each one of the kids mentally, emotionally, verbally, and or sometimes physically, wail on mom, or mom wailed back, and then it was, you know, get in there and clean up that kitchen, and it was all done with just huge amounts of hostility and the inflicting of fear on these little creatures that come in as this awesome active presence of love. And so those are all issues. The food is always a big thing.
Well, it's as David named it, that it was my fear of rejection of my offering. And so doing the meal and having it be accepted and appreciated sometimes. The first meal that I did was watermelon and spinach, and I loved it. We did a blended drink of watermelon and spinach, and I thought it was wonderful. And I had several people who said, I was up peeing all night. But they still ate the next time I fed them the next thing, and I tried a little bit more planning involved so that I could do it. But it really is pushing a lot of my buttons, and several worksheets
cool.
yesterday, and really didn't get the gestalt of what I wanted to put on the shopping list until 11 o'clock last night kind of thing. But I'm working through it, and I'm very grateful for my teammates here. So thanks, and
awesome.
We'll see what the regulatory speech comes up with.
All right, sounds good. Well, we're down to about 45 seconds, so we're going to close the show out. Time flies. I know there were some other callers. We'll just ask you if you'd call in tomorrow. We were going to do some processing work on the show tomorrow with a couple, but that's been postponed. We're still talking about when and if that's going to happen. And if you're in the Wilmington, North Carolina area next Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. We're going to be at Unity Wilmington. And then we're going to be in the early part of July, we're going to be at Unity in Birmingham. So if anybody is in those areas, bring a stranger to the show tomorrow, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.